We Will Not Be Tamed, a Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation podcast that encourages all Texans to get involved in conserving the wild things and wild places of our state.
I'm Lydia Saldana with the Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation, and we're sitting at Pamela Blanc's dining room table with Debbie Richardson about a week after the Texas Water Safari. Pam, how'd it go?
I lived. It was the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life, by 10, I think. But it was also just an incredible experience. Like, I can't believe I survived. And credit to my teammates, Sheila and Heather, for getting me through it, because I would probably still be laid out there on a desert island somewhere.
And Debbie, this is the 12th time for you.
Yes. Yep. And Pam, I'm so proud of you. Way to go. Way to hang
Thank
in
you.
There, girl. I know it's tough. It was really great seeing you at the finish line, and you did have such a strong team. I knew that you guys were going to make it without any issues. So congrats.
Thank you.
So Thank you. You said it's the toughest thing you've ever done by 10. And anyone who follows your adventures, you know, through your writing, through your social media, that's saying a lot.
Well, there were a lot of things that conspired to make it hard for me. And one was it was super hot on the second day. The heat index was near 110, I heard. And so I knew that I had to drink a lot, and I couldn't drink enough. I couldn't get enough ice to stay cool. I could feel myself overheating. And then my crew was telling me I wasn't drinking enough. Then I got sick because I couldn't stay cool, and then I couldn't eat. So the last, 12 hours, I was just nauseous and couldn't eat and could barely drink, which was not a good place to be. So electrolyte imbalance, not good.
Have you had that experience before?
No, never. Okay. And it's weird because I went into it knowing that I had to worry about electrolytes, like knowing how critical that was, but still couldn't keep up with it and felt like I was taking electrolyte caplets and drinking my electrolyte drink, but not enough. I just didn't take enough caplets, apparently.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be fair, we really haven't had that much heat this year so far. So, it's been pretty cool training season, and then all of a sudden it was hot. So there were a lot of people that had heat issues. A lot of people ended up getting out of the race and going to the hospital because of heat issues.
Yeah. Now, I should have asked beforehand, before we started recording this, but do you know how many started, how many finished? Do you happen to know that?
I didn't look that up.
It was just under 180 that started, and I have not seen the numbers on how many finished.
Yeah.
So, Debbie, you've done this 12 times. I mean, did you run into any issues that you didn't foresee, or how was it for you?
Yeah, there's always something. That's the crazy part about this race. And we started from the back. Well, we had to start from the back this year because we didn't have a complete team at the prelim race. And so that presents a unique challenge all by itself when you've got 180 boats sitting on a very small lake. There's not a lot of real estate, and it's really tough if you're a big boat trying to plow your way through that. So sorry to anyone that we ran over. Wasn't intentional.
This crazy stuff. We lost a team captain the night before. We lost a paddle a mile in. Had to use just crazy stuff.
We broke
happens.
A paddle at the start also. And so the guys are screaming. I'm sitting at the seat that has the spare, and I took a big, zip tie and zip that thing in there. So thinking it's the spare, it's not coming out. And they're screaming at me, "We need the spare, we need the spare." And my brain is not comprehending the words that they're saying. And I'm what? And then I see that Zach's not paddling, and I'm like, oh my God. So I reach behind me, I have a knife in the foam behind me.
Of course
you do. Reach behind me, saw off the zip tie, throw a paddle forward. And then just sat there and just like, man, what just happened? What just happened that caused that to happen? And this is so early in the race to lose your spare paddle. So then it becomes critical. You cannot have anything happen to another paddle because you don't have a backup at this point. You've got double blades if something happens to one of your singles, and it's a long way to go on double blades.
260 miles to be exact.
Not going
to
happen.
And it's hard. It's harder on your. It's harder on my shoulders to double blade because it's just.
It is, and our team was really much stronger on single blades this year than we were doubles. We knew we'd switch out a couple of times, and then we might use them in the bay. But really, we had primarily focused on single blading this year. And so
now I know Jonathan, who's sitting here monitoring this recording, shot some video, and we'll get to see that video very soon. But
yay.
Pam, the journalist, the writer, describe the scene at the beginning of the race.
Okay, so we were in row 5 because we had done the preliminary race, and you're seated according to how you do in the preliminary race. So we were towards the front. I think there were 28 rows or something
more
like
that.
Yeah. There were a lot of boats there. So on Spring Lake, which is the old Aquarina Springs, you know, Ralph the Swimming Pig used to be there. So it's a beautiful, clear lake. The starting gun goes off and there's just this mass surge, chaos, like panic, and everyone's paddling as fast as they can to get across a small lake. And at the opposite side of the lake, there's multiple points where you can scramble out onto the bank and run through the woods, and there's things to trip you up, like logs and other people's boats in your face.
Concrete,
roots, mud, and everyone is just sloshing to get to the same spot. So it's mass chaos and congestion.
And adrenaline's flowing.
And adrenaline like I've never felt in my life. And then, you know, somehow you get out of that and you get into the river and you've got 1 mile essentially to get to Rio Vista, which is where the first set of rapids that we ported, and the big boats do it differently, so you should describe how that happens.
Yes, so we pull up, we have a person in the front, stays in the front, the boat goes over the dam, the person who's in the back then jumps in, and the rest of the team runs on foot to the bottom to meet the boat and jump back in. So in the middle of that, I jump out of the boat, and where I had intended to run was blocked by another team and a boat, so I had to jump down to a lower level, and it was very slippery. And I slipped, and Jonathan caught this really cool photo of me,
that's
like
awesome.
In midair with
I
a foot out
that.
And water going everywhere.
So cool.
And I busted my butt right there.
That's
and,
traditional for you over the race, because she fell down a dam last year and somehow did not die.
So running through this chaos of other paddlers running to meet their boat, people are running with their boat, people are dragging boats, and we're arriving there at a time when there's so much going on. Normally, when we take off, like Pam was describing, we're usually on one of the front rows and we're able to get there kind of soon and we've got a pretty clear path, but we get there and it's the midst of the chaos. I had to run under boats and around people and then duck under these chains that they have set up as like a barrier. And then where I want to go down to the river is blocked, and I end up having to run under the bridge, and it's like this slippery slope, and I have to like jump in the river.
And meanwhile, the boat's coming down.
Coming down the river.
So you have to get there at just the right time.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
But you did, obviously.
And we're all spread out. It's like, I don't know where my other teammates are. I can't watch. I can't see the boat. I'm just running like for dear life. So, and people are screaming everywhere.
Now, what was that like for you, Pam?
It was insane. It was just ridiculous. I don't know. We were near the front, but got passed by tons of people. And then somehow we portaged around. So unlike Debbie, who their boat is so big, they have to kind of hand it down the rapids. We went to shore, grabbed our boat, ran with it, dragged it around the side, and then put it back in the water and hopped back in and proceeded along our merry way.
And you know what? This is a good time to back up a little bit and give me the stats on your boat, who was in it, and then we'll do the same for you, Pam.
Yeah, so I'm the only woman on a 5-person team. Our boat is approximately 40 foot long. It's a carbon racing canoe that's handmade in San Marcos specifically for this race.
Okay, Pam?
So I was on a 3-person team with Heather Harrison and Sheila Ryder, who are both veteran paddlers, and asked me to be on a team with them. We're in a 27-foot carbon fiber boat that's made also for this specific race.
Okay. So have you done a 3-person boat
I have.
Before?
Yes.
So it seems to me that when there's 5, you've got 5 more variables, right? You've got more variables, more things that could go wrong with the number of people.
Yeah, right? As a matter of fact, I raced with Heather and Sheila in 2013. Mm-hmm. So
you knew she was in good hands.
Yes. I've literally sat in Pam's seat. I really love the dynamic of the five-person team because, you know, you have to have one person has to go down at different points to get your food, you know, your nutrition, your hydration. You've got to maintain yourself. So when we have one person go down, we've effectively lost one-fifth of our power versus, you know, if you're solo, you stop, you've lost all your power. If you're a tandem, you stop, you've lost 50% of your power. So I really like the concept of the 3, 4, and 5-person teams. I have not raced on a 6-person team yet. I'd kind of like to, but the 5-man is a good size. It's a little more maneuverable. It's a little easier to transport. It's about 6 foot shorter than the 6-man boat.
So did you say you lost the captain the day?
I lost our team, our support crew on the sideline.
Okay.
So had an argument with one of our paddlers and quit the night before at about 9 p.m. So my husband jumped in like a hero. You have two team captains. So
And
he didn't really know what he was getting into, but did a great job.
But one thing I wanted to say about this race is like it is, we finished in 53 hours, which seems like a long time, but the whole thing was rushed. Like, you know, it's like you're rushing, like you have to eat your food as fast as you can because like Debbie said, there's 3 people on my boat and you don't want, one person goes down to eat, which essentially means cramming food in your mouth as fast as you can.
So let me back up just a second because you guys picked up Amy Boyd.
Yes, on
Friday night. They called a veteran safari paddler that's a friend of ours and asked her if she would step in as team captain and help them out. And man, thank God for Amy.
Yeah, so she.
I mean, but can you imagine getting that call on Friday night?
And she, like, Chris and, and Sheila Torres Blank were our official team captains. Yeah. And Amy was kind of the assistant, but she's the one that knew, I mean, she knew what to do. It was amazing. To have
and what's involved in that?
Oh, a lot.
Tell me,
like they have to be at all the checkpoints.
So your team captains and your crew are vital to your race. They are the team behind the team. So they have to meet you at all the checkpoints and like physically sign you in and out. And they also have to meet you with ice and water and food. So you can only go as fast as your crew can resupply you. So like literally we would pull up and we would be throwing out jugs and, you know, empty food bags and bottles and trash, and they're coming behind us picking everything up and replacing it with new jugs and new food bags.
No,
and
is that burgers
and ice packs?
Is that different? Did something change with? I read something that something changed with. Didn't they used to have the food on the boat?
Yeah, so they changed the rule in 2013 after someone passed away. They made it legal for you to be able to get medical supplies from your team, from your crew, and also you can get food from the crew. And before, you could only get ice and water, and you had to pack all of your own food on board.
So that makes a big
difference.
That's
really been a game changer for me, anyway.
As some of the veterans will say, back when safari was hard.
Yeah.
So I've already gotten from the veterans this year. Well, you know, this year was so easy, but not easy, but this year was different because the flow was so great. The water flow was so great. And there were, you know, no log jams. The river was really open. It'll never be like this again, Pam.
So now we don't have to Port-a-Jatine Dam.
Okay. Yeah. on a scale of, let's say, 1 to 12, Debbie, where was this race and how hard?
It never feels any easier. I don't care. I don't care how great the conditions are. It's always hard in some way. Like, yeah, we finished 13 hours faster this year than we did last year because of the water conditions.
Yeah.
So I have to give credit to that. But it always feels really hard physically and mentally. And there's always some other challenge that comes up that you weren't prepared for. So
we described the chaos at the beginning. Is the first, and I should have done a little more research about the route and all the difference. I can't ask any really detailed questions about
that. We can fill it in.
But is there a honeymoon portion of the race? Maybe the beginning is easier than...
No, it all sucks.
It's super frantic for the first few hours, I think, because after that it starts to spread out a little bit. But we were really in the thick of it and really in the chaos of it. We came off the starting line. We were at Rio Vista and about 18th or 20th place, and we'd moved into 10th place by the time we got to the first checkpoint. So there's a lot of boats that we passed, and in the process we were portaging at the same time they were. So we always have like an A, B, and C route at these portages, knowing especially that we were starting in the back this year, we were going to need alternate routes, and that when we pulled up, it might not be our ideal situation. And that really helped us out a lot, because we were able to communicate with the other boats around us, ask mm-hmm. where they were going, and then we took our like B or C route.
What happens at the checkpoint?
Where we pull up for the checkpoint at the handoffs. So,
yes.
So
there's certain spots that those are designated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's where we meet our crew and our team captains. And the team captains are the only two people that are allowed to remove anything or place anything into the boat. So you can imagine the chaos when a 5 or 6 person team pulls up. You've only got two people, and they've got to put all of these jugs and food bags in for all of the team members, and they have to pull out all the old stuff and not get anything confused in the process.
And is there somebody monitoring that to make sure that it's all, or is it just?
No, you're the only thing that is monitored is that they physically sign you in, so that the officials know that you've cleared the checkpoint. That's their way of keeping track.
And at that point, do you know who's ahead of you? Can they tell you who's ahead of you?
We try, but like information is really hard to get, especially on day one, because we're in such a frenzy to get in and out of the checkpoint. We'll pull away. The first thing is like identify that you have a water jug, identify that you have a food bag, you know, and then we're like, God, I wonder who's behind us. I wonder what place we're in. Then we start having this conversation. It's the same conversation every time we pull out, you know, we didn't get a chance to get the information. But getting the food, having that food rule change has really made it a lot more stressful for the crew and the team captains. So I just want to say how much I appreciate them doing this for us. Because you've got 5 people with 5 special requests, you know, and, you know, somebody wants a sandwich over here, you know, and somebody wants mashed potatoes at Palmetto.
I did
not mention any names.
Yeah, they're heating water to make stuff, and they're going to, you know, the Burger King to pick up burgers or breakfast sandwiches.
And they can barely make it from stop to stop, especially on day one in time.
And especially if the water's moving faster than theirs, that
absolutely.
Issue as well.
So they've got to get in their vehicles, caravan down to the checkpoint. And this year there were so many boats that they were having to park a pretty good distance away from where they needed to be. So they're having to walk in
all
of the stuff, ice and water, jugs, food, everything, ice packs. And they're trying to keep it cold for us while they're waiting. They have to get down to where they need to be positioned, where we can just pull up and we can make the handoff. And most of the places we already had pre-designated. So it'd be like river left on, you know, below the dam, on the gravel bar, you know, so it's usually pretty specific.
So we should have put a mic on Jonathan for this one.
I know.
Did you get video of that?
Yeah, a lot of that.
So we'll see some of that. So now, Pam, you got in trouble pretty quick in terms of your hydration. Tell me what happened there, and how did you keep powering through that?
Well, first I want to say the top part of the river is more technical, and there's more rapids and stuff. And I was really worried about one particular rapid called Cottonseed Rapid during training we had flipped over and over in this one spot. And the very last training run that we did, we got through that rapid without flipping our boat, so we were pretty psyched. And during the actual race, we got through that without flipping. So we were super excited about that, except when we came off that rapid, there was a boat T-bone in front of us. But we managed to stop. Those people jumped under our boat somehow, and we got through it. So day one, we were pretty pumped. And we kept saying to each other, we made it through Cottonseed, we made it through Cottonseed, because that was really a worry point for us. But day two, it started getting hotter and hotter, and we knew it was going to be hot. And then the sun came up, and we, you know, like, we were doing everything that we could, dipping our hats in the water and splashing water onto our bodies. And at the checkpoints, our crew would give us long ice packs that were essentially like a bath towel that had been sewn to have pockets of ice, so it was long and you could drape it over your neck or snap it around your waist or whatever. But I could feel myself just getting hotter and hotter, and the sun was out, and I was taking electrolyte caplets and drinking water, but I could feel myself losing it. So by this,
when you say feel, what did that feel like?
Like, I mean, I just felt I felt woozy. Like, I felt like, this is not good. Like, how can I remember my teammates saying, okay, we've gone, you know, we're halfway there. And I'm like, how am I ever going to finish this race? But you do, you just visualize You don't think of it as a 260-mile race. You think of it as, all right, I got to get to the next checkpoint. And that's all I could wrap my brain around, like the next checkpoint. The next checkpoint, I'll get ice. The next checkpoint, you know, whatever.
How many checkpoints were there?
10,
11? There's 10 official checkpoints.
Yeah, and then the finish after that. So I knew if I could get through the day when the sun went down, it would cool off. I never actually realistically thought that I was going to quit until maybe the very end. I thought I couldn't make it, but my teammates are going, and as Sheila Ryder says, the boat's going to Seadrift, just stay in the boat. So that was kind of the mantra. I felt nauseous and awful, and my teammates, I am not lying, my teammates kept me alive through that race. Seriously.
Wow.
I know.
Did you have fun?
Fun? I am so glad that I did. It was an incredible, intense experience. Parts of it were extremely fun. I loved the training. I liked the rapids at the top. It's fun. But the second day, the word fun, I kept shouting out, I chose this. I chose to do this. Mm-hmm. This is fun. So overall, looking back at it, there was fun involved, but it was more like the sense of accomplishment is so meaningful to me. Like, I am so proud that I did that race. I can't even.
And all of this, I'm looking at a patch. Yeah. We'll take a picture of this patch. This patch is a badge of honor, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh.
What are you going to do with yours?
Tattooed on my forehead. Wear it every day for the rest of my life. Look at it. Hold it.
Debbie, where do you have your patches?
Where do I have them?
Yeah.
On a shelf with the trophies.
Yeah. And they're all the same.
I'd like
right?
to do something with them someday. Yeah.
Yeah.
So many adventures happen along the way. What was memorable, Debbie, for you?
So, you know, it's hard not to focus on a couple of things that went wrong, because that's kind of like your takeaway. It's weird. It's like you do this whole 260-mile race. You've just spent 40 hours racing intensely with your team, and so many things went right, and then everybody always kind of gravitates toward that one thing that happened. But the one thing that does stick out in my mind is on day one, I was taking my turn in the stern, which means that I'm in the back seat, and you have rudders, or you have foot pedals, so you're controlling the rudder, basically, and you're relying on the bow person to tell you if there's something that you're going to hit, because I can't really see 40 foot ahead of me, especially with people sitting in front of me. I'm kind of short anyway. So we come around a corner, and everything had gone great and on our training run, but the water was a little bit different level, you know, on race day. And there were a lot of rocks all the way across, and just couldn't identify a slot to go to. So at the last minute, we kind of just called out, you know, go towards the tree. And the tree was against the left bank of the river. And it looked like we had plenty of room to clear it, but somehow we got slammed super hard against the tree. And at that point, if you don't keep the boat upright, like if the boat had tilted over, the boat could have become pinned at that point and probably would have broken the boat and could have ended our race there. So it was a big impact.
Where was that?
It was between Zedler and Palmetto. And so James, who was in the bow at that moment, the tree hit the boat first. It actually cracked a hole in the bow, fortunately above the water line, so we didn't have to make a repair, but it's got a significant crack in it. It hit the boat first, and then it hit him, and it came all the way up his side and up into his armpit, and he showed us after the race, he's just bruised black and blue all the way up and down. And ended up having to go to the doctor to have somebody take a look at it. And I think he's okay.
Wow.
But it was.
But he has to still paddle after that.
He has. Yeah. It's yeah. That was day one.
That was early.
Yeah. And it ejected him out of the boat. So what was going on in the back of the boat is that it took me out, and I was holding on to the tree with both hands, and I had one foot up underneath the gunwale, and I was holding the boat with my one foot to keep the boat from running over James and like trying to keep, you know, we're all trying to keep the boat balanced so it doesn't tip over. So like there's that moment where we're just sitting there, very precarious position, you know, trying to get our bowman back in the boat, you know, and make sure he's
okay.
This
sounds like a movie. I can hear the soundtrack.
And I'm like, okay, guys, I've either got to let go of the tree or I have to let go of the boat, because it was literally pulling me apart.
Oh,
so,
man.
everything was okay. Yeah. So, but that was like the one moment, you know, that stood out in my mind where I thought we could have possibly been in trouble. Wow.
Okay. How about for you, Claire?
Well, I have these images of what the section that they call Hallucination Alley, and I've been dreaming about this the last few nights too. And I don't know, I didn't hallucinate in the sense that you're probably imagining, but something happens to your eyesight when you're sleep deprived and it's late at night and you're on this dark tunnel of river with trees that sort of fold over the top, almost like you're going through a leafy tunnel. And the you know that you're looking at sky and trees, but somehow it's almost like a negative thing, like where the images get reversed. It's really hard to explain. So it looks weird in black and white, and you don't know if you're looking at tree or sky. Things get flipped. And then you keep looking at those trees, and they sort of morph into weird cartoon characters.
We had fun with hallucinations on night, too.
Just strange things. So I could swear that I was looking at an apartment building on the side, but I really knew that it wasn't an apartment building, or suddenly it looked like graffiti, but I knew I wasn't looking at graffiti. It's impossible to describe. It's just,
did you have that same experience?
We did. We were actually having fun with it. It was keeping us entertained. But Here's the weird thing is that what Pam's describing is like really common. Like a lot of people see the same things and they're not even in the same boat together.
Yeah.
So we were entering the bay, and we had to come out in a different place this year than we've ever been before because the main channel was clogged. So when we came out into Mission Lake, mm-hmm. we were headed straight across, and all of a sudden there's this white wall, and someone commented
mm-hmm. Okay.
Someone commented, "Wow, that's weird. I wonder when they built this wall. We didn't remember seeing this when we were here last time." And the whole boat bought into it. Oh yeah, that is weird. Huh? It's white, it's got windows, it's really industrial. You know, we're like really analyzing this wall. And then as the light begins to turn and shine, you know, further down the bank, wow, it goes all the way down. and then one of us looked back and said, "Oh, now you can see the trees. It's not really a wall." But like the whole team saw the same thing. But here's the weird thing. Another team identified it and said the same exact thing. They saw the same thing we did, the same way we saw it.
Isn't that interesting?
So people who weren't even in the same boat, so it wasn't even a matter of suggestions. So like Pam says that she saw graffiti. Everybody sees graffiti. Everybody sees the same sort of figures in the trees. It's really weird the way our minds interpret that collectively.
I also like the end part of the race. You go through this really, the river braids out, so you have to take these different cuts to go through. You can't just follow the river. It's not like you get in at San Marcos and then you finish at Seadrift. At the bottom part of the race, you have to kind of navigate through these channels and cuts, and it's not obvious where you're going. That's why people go down and train in this area. So you're dragging your boat over these muddy portages, and there's all kinds of crazy things in there, like, you know, giant spiders and snakes and alligators and stuff. And then you get into the slough area, and it's really interesting and cool looking. It's like, and the water was high, so you're kind of going through these narrow creek channels, and the leaves are arching right over your boat. I mean, you could stick your hand out, and you know, sometimes you have to lay back so you don't get a branch in the face or whatever, but it's just really visually intriguing. It's kind of like you're in the jungle.
You know, it's so unique because it's not accessible any other way, and you could be in the Amazon.
So not many people see that.
Very wild.
It's not
a lot of bird life down there.
Yeah. The other thing I remember is like at night, the noise, the sound, it was foggy the first morning, and then the sound of tree frogs was so loud we couldn't hear each other talk.
And the cicadas.
Really? Yes. Wow. So loud.
Very deafening.
Now, what about, you mentioned some snakes. What critters did you see? Anything that scared you in that?
I saw many fewer critters this time than during training, but the one critter that sticks in my mind, we were 13 hours behind Debbie's team. We came out in the bay, and we had heard that the bay was really flat, but the wind changed or something when we got out into it, and we had a good chop. I know it's been a lot worse. I've been told, you know,
it was an easy year. but there was a good significant chop. So we got to one little spit of land, and then we were going to kind of hop from spit to get to Sea Drift. Well, we couldn't do that. We ended up, because the waves were big enough that we had to go with the waves, and we went to a spot called, I think it's called Dot Island. That's what people Foster's were referring. Point. I don't know what it was. Anyway, it's a separate island. It wasn't just like a little point thing. But so we get there, and I'm kind of, they drag me out of the boat, and I'm collapsed trying to recover a little bit on the beach. And then there's a big alligator right offshore. Like, I know that alligators are like docile cows but or whatever,
but it was an alligator.
It was an alligator, and we had to push our boat to the leeward side of this little island we were on, so we would be out of the waves, so we could point our boat back out into the waves. You have to angle it just right so you don't flip your boat when you're trying to get Sea Drift. And we knew the alligator was there, but at that point you're like, whatever. Yeah. Like, I don't care about the alligator. I just want to get to the finish line. So F you, alligator, and he just wade out into the water and get back in the boat and paddle to Sea Drift.
And that's what you did.
And that's what we did.
Yeah, so at that point, nothing's going
to
stop you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then a motorboat was coming back, and I was like, that boat better not be coming to save me, because I was worried they were going to have to call somebody in to drag me away. And I was like, I am getting my patch. Nobody is stopping me. That boat better not touch me. I am getting my patch.
And you've been carrying it around ever since.
Yeah, it hasn't left my side.
So, Debbie, how did you do time-wise compared with previous races? Are you happy with...
This is one of the fastest races, yeah.
Because it was so easy this year.
So easy, yeah. Yeah, we had really, really good water this year. Our first day went really quickly. We got to Gonzales before we had to put our lights on, and that's a first.
Wow, so, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Yeah. So it just went really well. And then we had a calm bay, and it's the first time in 12 years I've ever seen a calm bay during the race. And so it's kind of like that unicorn. You know, you've heard legend of it, but you don't know if it really exists or not.
Yeah.
And when we entered into the back bay, I remember the team reassuring me, we're going in the bay, it's going to be okay, we're not going to put our skirt on, we're just going to paddle across, and you know, when we get to the point, we'll reassess it. And I'm like, okay. But you know, it was just, it was so weird, so surreal being back there in the dark and seeing that everything was calm. It was beautiful.
Wow. So what time did you get to Sea Drift? What was
it? It was 1:11:11.
Okay.
In the morning.
Yes.
Okay.
That's
so
cool.
It was very cool.
So what'd you do when you finish? What's the first thing you do?
Oh, I don't know. You get out of the boat and you just kind of hang out in the water for a minute, and you hug your teammates and you hug your crew, and you take your team photo. And that was a bit like herding cats at that point, because we're all like zombies just wandering around till somebody rounds us up and takes us to the hotel room.
So does it feel any different 12 times? To do it 12 times?
Just every time is incredible. Yeah, just every experience is unique. It still hurts. Like Sunday morning, I was listening to Pam say how she was feeling. Like everybody feels that way. Like Sunday morning, I was hurting so bad and wasn't feeling very good, and I was like, man, did I train up enough for this? I'm like, am I gonna start feeling better? You know, I feel terrible right now. And you just start thinking, why do I do this? Like, seriously, you just, every person has a time during the race when you're having a little bit of a down moment, and all of those same feelings and thoughts are going through your head. And then somehow, miraculously, you pull it together and you start feeling good again, and all of a sudden you feel like you're racing again. Like day two, you're feeling almost as good as you felt on day one.
Yeah.
And the whole team comes up and we all start really making a focused effort. Okay, has everybody had food and water? Okay, can we paddle for 1 hour without putting our paddles down? You know, and you really start like really focusing on that concerted effort, because that's where you really start making up time, you know, for the time that you were kind of like down that morning. But it's amazing that you can actually start to feel good again. Like, you just get through that somehow.
So yeah. Pam, what was that like for you? Tell me what time it was.
So we finished right around 2:00, I think, on Monday afternoon. We were coming into the finish line from a different angle than the other boats, because we had taken our detour to the to the island. So the finish line, we were coming in from a slightly different angle because we had taken a little detour to an island. There was another boat that was finishing just when we were along shore. So we saw that and we had a dog race to the finish line. I don't know how this happened because I was like laid out on the beach on this island. They got me back in the boat and I was like, I'm gonna paddle. So I started paddling and then we noticed that this other boat was coming in at the same time. So all of a sudden we just paddled as hard as we could. I don't know how we did that. There's
a competitive streak. Video,
there's actual video footage of it.
So
it did
happen.
It was crazy. So, and you know, my hands hurt, my shoulder hurt. I just felt like crap.
So who won?
They beat us by just a few seconds. But so the buoy is the finish, but the line that the buoy creates. So we were much further out to sea. Anyway, so we finally reached the finish line. We just literally fell out of the boat. I have never been so exhausted. So then we kind of climbed back in the boat and slowly made our way towards the shore. Then there's this wooden collapsing staircase that you crawl out of to get to the actual finish line, which is this just wooden, primitive wooden sign that says finish line Texas Water Safari. And it's like the feeling of putting my hand on that wood and then hugging Debbie and hugging my husband and the team captains that did so much for us. Just an incredible feeling. And I couldn't stand up straight. I thought if someone wasn't there to hold me, I would be falling on the ground. They got me to a little cot in the tent, and then someone handed me some tangerine slices that tasted so good. Finally, it was like the first food I'd had in hours. Yeah. I think I'd had 6 grapes, you know.
Yeah, you don't really eat or drink anything the whole time you're in the bay. You're just focused on getting to the finish.
And Debbie, you were there when she
was there. Yes. We knew she would be.
I was waiting.
Sheila and Heather were like, you know, Debbie's going to be at the finish. Debbie's going to be there. And we were so excited to see Debbie.
I only had like 2 hours of sleep at that
point. Oh, man. And she got up.
So what was that like to see her finish?
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. Just so happy and so proud for her and her whole team.
It was cool. It was really
it was
cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So what did you learn about yourself during this process?
I learned a lot. I learned first and foremost that I can do anything. I can do anything. So, I don't think I truly believed until I started this race that I could paddle 260 miles. The most I had ever paddled was 60 miles, but somehow I was able to do that. And so the way I did it was just by going a little bit by a little bit, you know. And I got to the finish line with the help of other people. I learned to rely on my teammates for a lot because I can't stress it enough, I would not have finished that race without Sheila and Heather. And I was sick and they got me through it. They took care of me. They, just the boost of self-confidence that race gave me, that's something that nobody can ever take away from me.
Mm-hmm. So much of it is mental.
It is.
Just pushing yourself past that point. And learning how to be uncomfortable, or learning how to be comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That's really what day two is about. Day two is like, okay, it's like two separate races. Day one, you're like really racing, and you've got all this adrenaline, and like Pam said, the river's technical, and you've got all these portages and opportunities to be out of the boat, and there's a lot going on to occupy your mind. But day two, you're just sitting there, not feeling well, with you're just sitting there with yourself, having all of these thoughts, you know? Yeah. And so it's really about mentally being able to overcome how you feel at that moment.
It's really cool too, because at different stages of the race, you're kind of running alongside other teams, and especially on that day too, having other people to talk to just helps you get through it. And, you know, people telling jokes, and you don't really get out of the boat like, I kind of told people, I'm doing this canoe race. And they're like, oh, and I've heard Debbie say this too. You know, are you camping along the way? And well, no, you don't. You just paddle straight.
First thing people
you
ask.
Pee in the boat. You do whatever you need to do in the boat.
Everything.
So everything happens in the boat. I mean, we did get out a few times just to try to cool off in the water, but those are few and far between. And I Did you guys even do that? Probably.
We had two seat changes on day two where we jumped out of the boat, dunked ourselves in the water, and jumped right back in. We were actually lonely. We didn't have any teams to be with.
It's because you're so fast. You got to hang back with the slower folks.
We tried to catch the boats in front of us. We got kind of, we got pretty close at some points. And then there was a team, the Cowboys almost caught us on day two. And that lit a fire. I think that's actually what cleansed the funk on Sunday morning is we were like, okay, we got to put the hammer down and get really focused. And so then we only ended up seeing one team like right before the log jam, and that's really it.
And also, so we, you guys finished eighth, is that right?
Eighth overall.
Out of 180 somebody that registered, and we finished 53rd. So I'm sorry, we finished 46th in 53 hours. And so you know, there are people that are in that race paddling for 100 hours, and I don't
I think somebody finished in like 97 hours or 98 hours. It's like amazing. Just barely made the cutoff. It's really spread out.
I could probably talk with y'all for another hour, but we probably need to wrap up. And I think I want to wrap it up with a $260,000 question.
I already know the answer.
Are you going to do this again next year?
Can we talk about that later? I'm not sure. The first words out of my mouth to my husband when I finished the race were, I'm never doing that again. But given the right circumstances, there's always something that you could do better, right? And I always think, well, what if I hadn't gotten sick? What if, you know, this, that, or the other? What if I was on a bigger boat? What if I was on a 4-person boat instead of a 3-person boat? What if, you know, there's a million different things that I'm curious about. So I am not ruling it out.
Debbie, I think I know the answer to this for you.
I'm gonna keep roll the dice. You know, I'm gonna keep playing as long as I'm in the game. But it's not just about the race for me. It's about the entire season. It's about the community of people that come together. It's about the friendships. It's about the bonds. Like Pam and I have a bond now because now you've done the water safari. It's like this sisterhood and brotherhood. You know, once you go through this experience, you're bonded with these people in a way that you wouldn't be, you know, otherwise. And the community people that come out to support us, our families that support us, the sacrifices that are made. People have kids. People have to make time to come out and train on the weekends, and they give up their family time. They take time off from work to do the race and to support. And the time that we spend together with our teams in the boats, that's just amazing. Like, to me, the training is more valuable and more fun than the actual race.
Yeah.
The race is just the coming together of all of that. But I really enjoyed being with my team this year. Everyone came together. Everyone was very positive and supportive of each other. There really wasn't anything negative about this entire experience. It was all very positive, and it's the journey, as they say, not just the destination.
Well, you both inspire us all. I really appreciate y'all taking the time. I enjoyed the conversation during the training, and I really appreciate the opportunity to follow up with you on the tail end of it.
Oh, I hope it inspires some people to go out and get on the river. You don't have to go do this crazy race. You don't have to bite off this big thing, you know. But if you do, just know that there's a community of people out there that are more than happy to step up to help you, give you any advice.
Absolutely.
Yeah, everybody's very supportive. But just get out there in whatever capacity you can and enjoy the river and you know, what we have available here in Texas is really unique.
Back home.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
We Will Not Be Tamed, a Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation podcast that encourages all Texans to get involved in conserving the wild things and wild places of our state.